AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. In Chicago, a high-stakes showdown in Washington, D.C. over the economy with no framework agreement yet as the nation faces a possible catastrophic default in June. The latest from CBS's Nancy Cordes.
An ominous sign less than 2 weeks before a possible U.S. default.
It's just unreasonable.
Republican negotiators walking out on talks with White House officials who then departed too.
Any progress?
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said the two sides are at an impasse.
Yeah, we got a pass.
The sticking point is government spending. In exchange for raising the nation's borrowing limit, House Republicans want to impose caps that amount to an across-the-board 13% cut in government spending.
President Biden is at the G7 summit in Japan, where world leaders have agreed to a new round of sanctions against Russia. CBS's Elizabeth Palmer with more on the U.S. supplying and training Ukraine with F-16s.
The Ukrainian leader has been asking for months that the U.S. provide F-16s to help turn the tide of war. A U.S. official said Mr. Biden is now committed to helping Ukraine get the jets, although they may actually be supplied by European allies.
No, he doesn't need F-16s now.
Originally, Mr. Biden had been reluctant to supply the planes as they have the capacity to hit targets deep inside Russia.
Legendary football player Jim Brown has died at the age of 87. Brown's wife made the announcement on Twitter, adding that the Hall of Famer was an unstoppable running back who retired at the peak of his career to become an actor. USA Today NFL reporter Tyler Dragon tells CBS News.
Jim Brown is not only just one of the best football players of all time, he's one of the best athletes in the history of sports. By the time he retired, he was the NFL's rushing champion, multiple time MVP, an NFL champion with the Cleveland Browns.
A day after Disney Corporation canceled a $1 billion project in Florida, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis is acting like it's not a big deal. CBS's Peter King in Orlando.
Ron DeSantis was in New Hampshire, not Florida, when he said he wouldn't put Disney on a pedestal.
So they can do whatever they want. I know people try to chirp and say this or that. The chance of us backing down from that is zero.
Disney cited changing business conditions as a reason for canceling the big project without mentioning the ongoing feud with DeSantis. That all started last year when the company criticized new laws it considers discriminatory toward the LGBTQ community. State attorneys are also trying to disqualify a judge hearing a Disney lawsuit against the state, claiming the judge's past remarks will color his opinion.
This is CBS News.
Progressive Insurance. Progressive can protect your home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, RV, and more. In short, a lot of things. Bundle today at progressive.com.
Veterans, are you working way too hard for way too little? There's never been a better time to consider a career in IT. You could enjoy a recession-resistant career in a rewarding field with plenty of growth opportunities and often flexible work environments. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation. You could start your new career in months, not years. Take classes online or on campus, and financial aid is available to qualified students, including the GI Bill. Now is the time. mycomputercareer.edu.
Ask Sherwin-Williams and get 35% off Emerald products and Superdeck stains May 19th through the 22nd. That means 35% off our most popular color family, blue. Psychologists have found it to be soothing and relaxing, which makes it especially great for bedrooms and bathrooms. And of course, get 35% off all of our other colors. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. An update at Solaris caused many area businesses in Wisconsin Rapids to lose phone service this morning. They hope to have the problem fixed soon and restore service. In Portage County, the Judicial General Government Committee will meet on Monday, May 22nd at 5:30. The 36th class of graduates from the Law Enforcement 720 Academy program celebrated their achievement on Wednesday. 16 Mid-State Technical College students completed the basic law enforcement training they need to become an officer in Wisconsin. Kurt Hewer, Law Enforcement Academy Director, said this is a critical step for students entering the field of law enforcement. The 720 hours of training is an intense mix of classroom and hands-on training, preparing the recruits to handle the effective communication skills, critical decision-making abilities, and physical rigors of being a well-equipped guardian to protect and serve our communities. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Clear skies overnight with a low of 41. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. High temperatures reach up to 72. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Lows dip down to about 46. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy skies. A mix of clouds and sun Sunday with daytime highs approaching 74. 77 Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 51.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Good word.
It's a wonderful, it just has a good mouthfeel.
That's so it goes, that's so it goes, that's so it goes, that's so it goes.
La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon lunch hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. Hey, Jane, remember a couple like months ago when we were talking about how Wisconsin's on the brink of a constitutional crisis because of our public defenders and district attorney shortage?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. 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 So maybe we're actually going to do something about it.
Oh, stop teasing me.
Well, at least the first step was earlier this month, about a month ish ago, maybe 2 months ago, Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, wrote a report on basically what's been going on with our the problems with the shortage of and the low pay for public attorneys and the growing concern it has as there's backlogs of actually serving justice in Wisconsin. So welcome back, Ari Brown.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be back on.
So I guess let's just start from the very top as far as putting numbers to these very critical, important positions in Wisconsin. How much do public defenders and assistant DAs as like a starting wage typically make in Wisconsin right now?
So there is a pay progression schedule that is set for a number of different state-level positions that is published by the state's Division of Personnel Management. This changes about every fiscal year or so. Currently, and assistant DAs and public defenders are on the exact same schedule, and okay. It has been that way as far back as we can find in the data. So when we're referring to one of those groups here, we're referring to both of them.
Got it.
Currently, as of today, the starting annual salary for both of those two positions is $56,659. So about $57,000, about $27.24 an hour. So when you look at that compared to what lawyers make just generally, it, you know, is quite far below.
Very different.
That.
And so yes. what do, because I mean, it's obviously different in Wisconsin, but I remember like knowing some law students who in California, some of their starting pay at corporate law firms were like 180. And I don't think mm-hmm. it's quite that high as what the median is, but the median lawyer in Wisconsin. And when you take the median lawyer's pay in Wisconsin, is that including DAs and public defenders or is that excluding them? And this is all just private practice.
That is a good question. So that data that we include in our piece comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, from something called the Occupational Employment and Wage Statistics, OEWS. This is a comparison that the Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau uses. So we found it as like the most accurate way to stack up what ADAs and public defenders are making against what someone with a comparable type of job would make in the private sector. I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember if it includes them or does not, but obviously the preponderance of lawyers in Wisconsin are in the private sector. Yeah. So this would be predominantly private sector, but their median pay as of 2021, which is the most recent data available, was $115,336. If you compare that to the median for ADAs and public defenders, which is slightly higher than the starting salary, that's about $74,000, but that's a $40,000 gap in the median salaries between those two positions.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
That is
yes.
a lot.
Well, and especially when you consider, obviously it depends upon what law school you went to, but all of these lawyers end up with an enormous amount of school debt.
Yes. And I think that is, you know, more so than a lot of other jobs when you compare the public sector pay and benefit package to the private sector. There are all sorts of reasons why someone might take a public sector job over a private sector job, including benefits, including just kind of the sense of doing something, having pride in working in the public sector. But I think when you look at a gap in pay that is that large, especially for those individuals that all necessarily had to go through law school, that is a really, really noticeable difference, and certainly something that we just hear anecdotally is swaying people away from taking these positions and more towards moving to the private sector.
Which is probably one of the many reasons that this is causing the constitutional crisis that we were either in or could be in. And so I guess as you, with your report, as you looked at these two offices, what was kind of notable as far as the problems that they're facing or kind of the history of how we got here? And we could take them one at a time.
Yeah, so I'll start with district attorneys. And some of the data that we got for each of these two offices differs a little bit. It was just what we were able to obtain to kind of paint this picture. But to start with, so for district attorneys, the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association noted that just based on the average number of cases that their offices received around the state from 2019 to 2021, the state would need about 577 full-time prosecutors to fulfill that level of work on an annual basis. Just handling that workload and working 40-hour weeks. So okay. No overtime, just 40-hour weeks. They would need 577 full-time employees. Currently, they have about 456, and not all of those positions are filled. So we're looking at a shortage in terms of just addressing the workload in a 40-hour week of about 100 positions. That is before you account for vacancies and you account for turnover and you account for all of those other factors.
So just to repeat it, so it's basically we're over 100, like the discrepancy between how many people are needed and what there's actually budget allocation for is already about 100 job difference. And then of the jobs that are available and budgeted for, not all of those are even filled.
Correct. And that's based off of information from the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association. But yes, that's the best information that we, you know, found available to kind of get at what does the workload look like. Another thing that I think, you know, kind of the cascading effects of that are, I think the term backlog has been tossed around quite a bit. And I think that sometimes it's, you know, not exactly clear what that means. But essentially, you know, during the pandemic, the first year to year and a half or so of the pandemic, the court system slowed down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. There were not a lot of in-person cases happening. And that created, you know, there are cases that need to be heard in person. So there was a backlog created. There are many cases that should have been processed during that time that for obvious reasons were not being processed. We have data on kind of how long it takes for criminal cases to be disposed or like taken care of, essentially, going back to 2013. So the median felony case in 2013 was resolved in 152 days. In 2021, that was 241 days.
Oh, wow.
For misdemeanors, it was 89 days in 2013, so just right about at that three-month mark. In 2021, it was 168 days. So really, really stark increases in just the amount of time that these cases take to be processed. Those have started coming down over the last calendar year or so, but are still well above their levels, even in 2019. And I'll also note that from 2013 to 2019, before the pandemic took effect, there were backlogs that were slowly building, obviously not to any extent from what we saw with the pandemic, mm-hmm. but those were still numbers that were increasing gradually over time.
Our guest is Ari Brown. He's a senior research associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're talking about there might actually be an agreement on paying our DAs and those people more money. How shocking.
So is there anything else to note about the DA office?
So the one other piece of information that I think is just interesting to mention, we're only able to get data from Milwaukee County, but just in general, they have about 120 positions in their office. Over the last six full years of data that they have, so from 2017 to 2022, they had an average of about 16 separations per year, people leaving their workforce. In the beginning of the 21st century, from 2000 to 2005, the same amount of years, that was an average of 8. So that has doubled. It's a low sample size, so it's, you know, it's not exactly clear the extent, but just from testimony that we've heard from individuals in that office, certainly there's more turnover now than there used to be.
So then what does it look like on the flip side as far as the public defender's office?
Yeah, so there's a lot going on there as well. We have much more distinct numbers there for statewide what's going on that were provided to us from the Office of the State Public Defender. So from 2018 through 2020, there was an average of about 10 to 11% turnover each year in their workforce. That jumped up to 17.9% in 2021, and then again to 20.4% in 2022. So one out of every five individuals in the State Public Defender's Office left in 2022, which is a staggering number. Yeah. So that was one that really stood out to us. And at the same time, in each of the four previous fiscal years, the number of applications to fill those positions have declined. So that was 355 in 2018, and that has dropped to 168 in 2022. So I think that really gets at kind of the issue, and just shows you the extent to which there is a workforce challenge happening right now.
And it's interesting, like one of my best friends since childhood is a public defender in Madison. And like, she is truly one of those people who's like, this is what she is committed to, this work. She'll also complain about the pay.
I'm sure.
it's basically asking people on either side, because as like having starting wage for a DA or a public defender being the same amount, it's asking people to like, you, it's like teachers almost, where it's like, well, you signed up for this. You know, you're a bleeding heart who believes in the system. So you, because of that, you should be willing to be paid less.
Yeah, how dare you care?
And so when we come back from the break, I want to first talk about why we need to solve this for the good of all society. This is not just about paying people more money in those jobs. Why the shortage itself actually affects all of us, but then also because there was a proposed in Governor Evers' budget proposal, he had a part of that that was going to address this. And then shockingly this week, there was actually some bipartisan movement on a Republican bill that also addresses this, that I think was even a dollar more per hour than Governor Evers. And so I would love your insight, Ari, when we come back, on if either of those proposals go far enough to potentially alleviate some of the problems that we're seeing. So when we come back, Ari Brown, senior researcher with Wisconsin Policy Forum, will still be here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I'm all about the data, mo' data. I'm all about the data, mo' data. I'm all about the data, mo' data. I'm all about the data, about the data. I'm all about the data, mo' data. I'm all about the data, mo' data.
So, have you done sports?
Yes.
What about weather?
Done that.
I've got it. The moon.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to James Help Seth Pick the Next Theme for this week's Seth Faces the Music. It's on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio, WFHR. The problem is, he's done so many shows already, it's getting tough to find the next group of songs. Don't worry, though. It'll be fine.
Yeah, all right. You got me. I give up.
That's it. The theme for the next Seth Faces the Music will be...
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car. He came home and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Meet Ingrid, fiery spirit, caring grandma, proud trucker.
I've logged more than 4 million miles in my truck. If people knew what I know, lives could be saved. I was driving outside of Ohio when a gentleman stopped suddenly in front of me. But it takes my 80,000-pound truck 200 yards to stop. I'd given myself extra room, but it's not a chance worth taking.
It's our roads. It's our safety.
Visit www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Hey, know what I mean? This is the Shaw. W-A-U-K.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madner, and we are talking to Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate with Wisconsin Policy Forum, about what's happening with our public defender's offices and our DA offices and why it's important, why you should care, I think is the next question. And so for, you know, many of us, I would say probably, I don't exactly know what the number is, but I would say the great majority of us don't necessarily interact with the criminal justice system. And so why should any of us care if we're not in the backlog and waiting for our case to be heard, or the victim of a crime waiting for that case to be heard? Why is this something that needs to be addressed because it's actually affecting our society?
Yeah, so I'll kind of break this down into the two offices. So I'll start with public defenders. It is a constitutional right to have representation regardless of your income level. You know, the way that that works in different states is different, but essentially, you know, even if you cannot afford an attorney to represent you in court, you are constitutionally allowed to have one, and that is the job of public defenders. When those individuals are not compensated requisite to what some of their peers make in the private sector, and you don't have those positions filled, you are, you know, treating individuals who can't afford attorneys differently than you are treating individuals who can afford attorneys. And so I think that that is something that really stands out. You know, we can never say when any of us are going to be in dire financial straits. And I think it is reassuring to know that we live in a country where you are afforded a constitutional right to legal representation.
Yep.
On the other side, you know, I think that there is a lot of conversation over the last couple of years about crime and public safety. And really, when you slow down the level to which prosecutors can handle cases, criminal cases that are coming into their offices, you know, there are, you know, it really just gums up the whole system. And you have, you know, individuals who might be aware that that criminal cases are not being prosecuted in the way that they used to be, and you know, might get away with certain crimes in a way that they might not have been able to in the past. You know, obviously, the extent to which that's happening is hard to say, but you really do need a functional prosecutorial system in order for, you know, it's just a key facet of the public safety conversation in a broad sense. So to have a workforce there that is not fully functional creates these backlogs. And for individuals who have a criminal case, they're spending longer and longer amounts of time having that case processed, potentially sitting in some sort of local jail or state prison, which is, you know, something that you don't want to have happen. It's just a bad policy outcome.
So at least there's some movement, it sounds like, on addressing this problem. And so I know we don't have a ton of time left, but as far as kind of outlining or high level, talk about what has been introduced in the legislature, how that differs from what Evers said, and do either of these stand a chance to actually solve or at least start to solve this problem?
So to start with the proposals, both Governor Evers and the Republican legislature have seemed to be on board with pay increases. So in the governor's budget proposal for both of these offices, there's a new starting salary of $35 an hour. The Republican legislature's proposal raised that to $36 an hour. But ultimately, we're talking about a difference of about about $2,000 a year. So the governor's proposal would be $72,800 a year versus the Republican proposal would be $74,880, but much more in line with what you might see in the private sector. So that seems there seems to be a good amount of bipartisan agreement on that one. I, you know, would be surprised to not see this get through to some extent. Both Governor Evers and the Republican proposal add some prosecutorial positions. It obviously differs on all the details of that, but there are a couple positions that are added. I think the other really big one that comes into play on the public defender side, and something that is that was included in the governor's bill and is also included in the Republican proposal, there are private sector attorneys who will take on public defender work, either when workloads are too large or when there's a conflict of interest. They're compensated at a flat rate that is set by the state of Wisconsin. For a while, it was $40 an hour, which for a while was the lowest rate in the country. That was raised to $70 an hour in 2020, which was not the lowest, but still kind of towards the bottom. The governor pitched a $100 an hour set hourly rate there, and the Republicans have included it in their proposal. So that is also something that we're likely to see, and that can really help to alleviate some of that backlog on the public defender side. In terms of how this will impact things, I think that's going to be the real question for policymakers to pay attention to going forward. You've seen a lot of these conversations happen anecdotally. You hear about DA offices where you have one or two individuals leave, and that's like 50% of the prosecutorial power of that entire county. And that can be a real problem. And I think you've heard salary kind of at the forefront of this conversation. So this kind of pretty stark salary raise is something that you would hope would bring people back, or at least bring people to apply to these jobs, maybe not necessarily keep them around for extended periods of time, but at least bring in those new individuals with pay rates that are much closer to what you see in the private sector. If that doesn't happen, I think it's going to be on those same policymakers to go back and talk to the DAs and public defenders around the state and say, you know, we raised pay. That doesn't seem to be bringing people back. Why aren't more people applying for these jobs? But I think, you know, there seems to be a lot of bipartisan agreement, which I know in this state is not something we are used to.
No, we got to celebrate it when it happens, man.
Yeah. So this seems, you know, this is one of the things in the budget that I think we might actually see some real movement on, which is pretty exciting.
That is exciting because this is a big deal. And so thank you for covering it. Thank you for breaking it down for us, Ari. Excited to have you back on whatever next project you report on and publish. And so it's always fun to have you here.
Always fun being here. Thanks for having me back.
All right. When we come back, we will be talking to federal prosecutor Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, who is an expert on congressionally run investigations, to talk about all these investigations that are happening on in D.C. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
If you're hanging out in Waukesha, it's 101.1.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care.
you can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home just waiting for the... And there they go! Almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double-arm kid carry. Looks like Dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but Mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like Mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break?
Because she may not be having lunch again until September.
Or a single father of two who works three
part-time jobs and still can't put enough food on the table.
Or maybe a mother who cleans offices at night,
hoping to find meeting leftovers to take home to her hungry family.
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet.
I am the 1 in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. The annual Portage County Safety Fair is tomorrow, Saturday, May 20th. Portage County Emergency Service Agencies and Mark Toyota of Plover are hosting this free, fun, and educational event from 10 to 2 at Mark Toyota in the Village Park of Plover. The event focuses on safety and emergency preparedness for all ages. Live fire demonstrations, emergency vehicle displays, a fire safety house, boat simulator, and hands-only CPR are just some of the activities planned for the day. You can purchase food and drinks from the Boys and Girls Club and help their organization. 4 of Wisconsin's 5 major power companies are asking regulators to let them raise rates next year. For Alliant Energy customers, the hikes would add about $13 a month to the average light bill and a little more than $5 a month to the average gas bill. Decisions are expected by the end of the year. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Clear skies overnight with a low of 41. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. High temperatures reach up to 72. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Lows dip down to about 46. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy skies. A mix of clouds and sun Sunday with daytime highs approaching 74. 77 Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 51.
And so I'm very excited to talk to one of the authors and potentially the other author. We'll see if she can still join us. But joining us right now is Christy Parker, who is a former federal prosecutor and currently counsel at Protect Democracy, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit, anti-authoritarian group. And given kind of the complicated politics of what's been going on, they published a report that details the proper scope of criminal prosecutions and congressional oversight, and kind of tease up what is the appropriate and what's appropriate and what's an abuse of power. And so I am so excited to have you here. Thanks for joining us, Christy.
Thank you for having me. And I'm really pumped by the Law and Order music. That was
we do what we can to, you know, we try to lighten things up as far as when it comes to very complicated and important topics. And so I guess at the very beginning and high level of this. How do you, and actually, let me introduce her as well. Ann Tindall just joined, and she is also counsel at Protect Democracy and is an expert on congressionally run investigations. And so, Ann, I was just about to ask kind of the, how does the average person look at the news and not, one, I guess on one side, get jaded and just call all of this politically motivated versus what is serious and also needs attention and it needs a criminal investigation?
Well, so, it is very easy in the climate that we live in, I think, for people to just throw up their hands and say that there's so much chaos going on. Everything must be political. You know, what happens must be dictated by whoever's in charge. And one of the reasons we exist as an organization and one of the reasons that we wrote this report is to really try to help people focus on the fact that we are a democratic society governed by rules and laws, and we do have institutions that have rules around how they're supposed to function, and they do function every day. And there are actually ways that you can tell whether they're doing the right thing or not doing the right thing. And I think one of the key things we wanted to focus people on is that it's actually not aberrational, but normal and something we should all hope for. The idea that we can hold our political leaders accountable if they have done things that warrant investigating or charging them with crimes, because in a democratic society, no one is supposed to be above the law. So hopefully just by, you know, focusing on those rules, those institutions, honing in on what they're supposed to do, people can cut through all that noise and make clear assessments of what's going on.
Anne, do you have anything to add?
Sure. I mean, I think especially with respect to congressional investigations, it is easy to understand why people look at Jim Jordan throwing bombshells and think this is all a political mess. But the fact of the matter is Congress's power of oversight is an absolutely essential check on abuse of power. And we don't want to let the fact that some members may not make the best use of it take away from the fact that we need to have this sort of tool in our constitutional toolbox. Now, when you have members prejudging the results of an investigation or running right to public testimony instead of trying to get to the bottom of something, you may have a sign that this is not the best way to deploy congressional resources. But I think to suggest that to cast away as just political noise Congress exercising its power to check other branches and other parts of the government sort of misunderstands its role in all of this.
Yeah. So you're saying we shouldn't just infer when there's no evidence, we shouldn't just infer that they're, you gotta figure it out. You gotta interpret.
That's one of the basic tenets. And, you know, I mean, good congressional investigations are designed to understand things and achieve a goal, not to, you know, Congress isn't a prosecutor. They're not there to name and shame. They are there to pass laws that make the country function better. If that's not what they're up to, then, you know, that's a good sign. They're maybe not using that power appropriately.
I think there might be some who like the whole name and shame thing. I just have a feeling for some reason.
So I guess Have these things always been this political? Because even this week we talked about it. It's like, what has more political spin right now? Like Comer's investigation that is really, like, he lost whistleblowers, Durham's findings that weren't that sticky. But as far as, like, how political this all seems, is this just part of the symptom of the era we live in of partisan politics in the 24-hour news cycle?
I think historians would probably say, if you really dug into the way some of our politics worked throughout our history, that, you know, that there never really was a time, you know, there never really was some halcyon days of, you know, comedy all around. But I do think we live in an era now where It's just far more, it's just far easier to send your political messaging around the world. We have, you know, we have social media, you know, we just have means of doing that that we never had before. And frankly, we do have now some politicians who have really, you know, pushed the envelope in terms of the way they talk about things and the way that they present themselves. I mean, when you have somebody like Donald Trump, who is, you know, who openly talks about using his government powers to exact retribution on people or to further his own political aims or to protect himself and his friends, you know, that's someone who's openly talking about doing things that are not what we do in a democratic form of government. Mm-hmm. So while we may have had people in the past who weren't great at living out the, you know, the tenets of a democracy, he truly is breaking new ground and being so willing to openly talk about what he intends to do and the departure he intends to make from the society we have thought ourselves to live in all this time.
If you are just joining us, our guests are Christy Parker, a former federal prosecutor, currently counsel at Protect Democracy, and Ann Tindall is also counsel at Protect Democracy and an expert on congressionally run investigations.
So the report that you guys published also focuses on the importance of independent law enforcement institutions and investigative bodies. So why is that so important, and how can we kind of, how can we tell if those institutions are functioning the way they should, like as the general public looks on and reads the news?
So I'll start with law enforcement, okay, and then, you know, Anne, I think, can follow up with Congress. But the law enforcement, the government's law enforcement powers are some of, if not the most potent powers that it has. If you have a person in charge of the government who seeks to use those powers as a weapon against enemies or as a weapon to promote friends, then you really have something that doesn't comport with what we think of as a democracy. So that is why it has always been so important. And certainly since, you know, post-Watergate, when we saw the abuses of that era, why it is so important to create rules, norms, and guardrails around our law enforcement institutions to make sure that they are acting in a nonpartisan way that is about law enforcement and not, again, about the political interests of the person in charge. So, you know, the way that you can tell whether they're operating in the right way is whether they're following those, you know, laws, rules, and policies. So we've got a constitution. We have the laws that the Department of Justice, for instance, is supposed to enforce. And then we also have a set of guardrails around, you know, keeping a division between the White House and the Justice Department, mm-hmm, in terms of specific law enforcement matters. So you're not supposed to see the President of the United States routinely commenting on specific Department of Justice investigations or calling for specific people to be prosecuted or directing on Twitter his attorney general, you know, to do certain things. And there are actually rules that our various administrations have put in place to govern communications between the White House and the Justice Department to keep them separate. And the Justice Department also has rules that governs how it brings prosecutions. And it has rules about when it comments on cases. So if you see the Attorney General out commenting about how people are guilty of crimes before they've been prosecuted, you know, that's a way of knowing that things aren't really going well.
Yeah.
And, you know, we may have seen something like that in recent years. But I know Anne's got some things to say about how, you know, how Congress is supposed to behave as well.
Sure. I mean, Congress has vast power to investigate, but it is not unbound. It has to be tied to legislation or oversight of the funds that has appropriated. And importantly, Congress is not a prosecutive body. It has the power of investigation to impeach certain officials, and beyond that, any effort to intrude on or usurp prosecutorial power is a violation of the separation of powers, and historically has been guarded against by by both Congress and the executive branch through an accommodations process of, you know, compromise and coordination and conversation, a lot of which broke down over the last decade, and particularly broke down when Donald Trump told Congress to, you know, here's the back of my hand. I'm not going to give you anything you ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of escalation to, you know, no interest in what the other branch of government is trying to do and understand. You know, it's dangerous on both when it comes from the president and when it comes from Congress.
And so I'm debating, because what I really want to get to next, so I think I'm going to keep you guys through the break, because I think it's a bigger conversation than we can have in the next 3 minutes, is also because I think that there's a difference between, you both are experts, right? Federal prosecutor, expert in congressional run investigations. And there is a big gap between the expertise that you both have and the work that you've done versus the layperson sitting at home watching CNN, right? And it seems like the conduit between those two things becomes journalists and the media. And so when we come back from this break, like, I would love to talk a little bit more about the role of journalism, like journalists, and how they're breaking this down. Because I think in the last, there was a CNN poll that indicated that 76% of Americans say politics played at least some role in the decision to indict Trump. And so I would love to have a little bit more conversation about that, like the gap between what's actually happening and what, like, the perception becomes by from the people, like, sitting at home just consuming the news. And so we will talk about that when we come back from our next break. But we are talking to Christy Parker, who is a former federal prosecutor and currently counsel at Protect Democracy, and also Ann Tindall, who is counsel at Protect Democracy and an expert on congressionally run investigations. And we were talking about their new report, kind of trying to break down everything that's happening with Trump and Hunter Biden, and maybe we'll even get to what could actually happen. What would it actually mean if we prosecuted Donald Trump? All right. Well, we'll come back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director James and head of production Seth will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists, in their own words.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life, but for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together, we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's matchingdonors.com. Matchingdonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 22 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're someone in need of an organ transplant, visit matchingdonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life. Matchingdonors.com.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
40 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we were talking to Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, who are two of the authors of a new Protect Democracy report called Investigating and Prosecuting Political Leaders in a Democracy, How to Assess the Difference Between the Rule of Law and Abuses of Power. And we ended the last segment kind of teeing up, because I read this report, and it's fascinating, and it's really helpful. Not everyone's going to read this. You know, the average person's not going to read this. And the gap between people who work, live, and breathe in upholding the law, and especially in D.C. and in our politics, and so you both are experts, and the gap between that and the person at home consuming the news. And so what role does the media and journalists have to play in, like, creating helpful versus unhelpful narratives when it comes, because so much of this is like our belief in democracy and then democracy is working. It's kind of like if it's a little like Santa Claus to a certain extent, right? It's like that we have to believe in it to also continue to believe that it's working. And so what have you guys found as far as what is helpful with media coverage versus what is unhelpful, and or even how can they do better? How could we do better?
Well, so one of the things I often find myself wishing is that more people could participate in the process, not by committing crimes and getting indicted, but by, you know, serving on grand juries or serving on juries, because I have found over the course of my career that when people do that, they really get a sense not only of how the system works, but they see the role that they play in it as citizens and as jurors, and they see how the rules are laid out and all of those sorts of things. But since everybody can't do that, that really is why journalists are so incredibly important, not just in providing information, but in making sure that our democracy can function by being kind of the people in the room who can help the people who aren't there understand how things are supposed to work. So yeah. I think journalists just play a really critical role, not just in amplifying the messages that the two sides of the political aisle are throwing at each other, but really on zeroing in okay, there's a criminal investigation going on here. What are the laws that we're dealing with here? What do we know about that's in the public record about the evidence? What do we know about whether other people who aren't political leaders who've done things like this? What do we know about how they have been treated? Let's make a comparison and make sure everybody's being treated the same. You know, what do we know about the way the Justice Department or the DA's office is behaving? And what can we tell people about whether or not they're following their own practices or whether they're deviating from those practices? So it's not just being stenographers and reporting, you know, what the various interested parties say, but it's really going in and explaining to people, this is the process, this is how it's supposed to work, these are the people who are following the process, these are the people who aren't, and here are the ways in which they are or they aren't. And I think that is really helpful in helping people cut through all that noise and seeing whether is it standard for the New York DA's office to bring a charge like the one that they brought against, you know, Donald Trump. Have they charged other people with that? Does the indictment that they brought look like ones that they brought before? You know, are we talking to people who've worked in the DA's office who can tell us about that? That's really the role that journalists play. And I think, again, it's not just, you know, reporting the news. It really is being an actor in our democracy.
I think all of that's right. And I just want to add one small point, which is it's also important that journalists not confuse the political implications of a particular investigation with a politicized investigation. Because we believe that no one is above the law, that means we also are from time to time going to see indictments or investigations of political actors. And of course, that has an impact on their political future and on our politics. That does not mean that the investigation itself is improperly politically motivated. And that is something I see journalists misconstrue from time to time.
And it was all I could think of, because the one that I didn't even throw out yet, we didn't even talk about George Santos. And that's a whole other investigation.
Which is a doozy.
It's a whole doozy in and of itself. But
who is George Santos?
That's the eternal question that some documentarian 15 years from now will probably actually uncover, and it will win an Oscar. But beyond all of these other investigations, obviously the big one, and there's many, of Donald Trump. And so I guess to kind of end on this note, what would prosecuting a former president mean for our democracy, at least in your two's opinion?
I think based on what we've seen of his conduct and the evidence that relates to the various laws that he may have violated, like I think we all saw on January 6th and before that this is not a hidden thing. You know, he mm-hmm. tried to overturn a free and fair election, and he mobilized a mob in order to, you know, just disrupt the process of finalizing that. So I think what it would mean for our democracy to actually bring him to a point where he is placed before the law and, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty like anybody else, but we go through the process that any other person who did those things and hundreds of other people who did those things have had to go through, that will actually be a moment in which we will see, you know, the words on a piece of paper that are in our Constitution, you know, the words that we say about this being a rule of law society, really coming to fruition. And we'll see how it all turns out. I mean, there's a process, and, you know, he would have a right to defend himself in that process. But I think the real question we should ask is what it would mean for our democracy if, knowing all of what we know, we can't put that process into the works, and we can't put him, you know, before the law and try to hold him accountable, because I think that is what would really say the most about our democracy, and it wouldn't be a good thing.
He might be looking for a couple lawyers too. I'm just throwing it out there. It seems like he has trouble keeping them employed.
I don't know. Tapioca's doing okay.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, tapioca.
That's a joke. But thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add or end on in the last minute that we have? I'll take that as a
I think just thank you for having us, and thank you for playing the Law and Order music.
Well, thank you, Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, so much. This is, like, thank you for the report. We will certainly add this to our show notes for today, because it is super interesting, and it's important to actually try to break through the noise, like you said. And so thank you for spending time with us. Thank you for writing this report, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.
All right. Well, when we come back, Mike Clemens will be here to talk about at Civic Media. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes, as long as it's coming from love. then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.